wake up.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. So, Alabama, tonight, where will they fit with the College Football Playoff Committee? And does it really matter? They could be fourth, really should be fourth, but does it matter? Because there's still a lot of football to be played, and as people have been saying in processing what happened on Saturday, there's going to be football played probably without Alabama. I mean, unless a complete collapse by LSU down the stretch, which is unlikely to happen. They'll beat Ole Miss, they'll beat Arkansas, they still have another game down left in the season. But Alabama will be sitting when everybody else is playing, and does that matter to the committee? It didn't matter one time before when Alabama wasn't playing and everybody else was, and they still got into the playoff. But sometimes you need a lot of help. Alabama has done this in the past where they have lost a game, people wanted to bury them under the old system, and yet they sprung back to life. And even under the new system, that's the same thing happened. They would lose a game, not play for the SEC championship, and still found their way into the national championship. Whether it is LSU beating them in a field goal fest, or there was Johnny Manziel beating them in Tuscaloosa in 2012, whether it was losing to Auburn, Alabama has found a way to get back into the national championship race. Can they do it this year? If you have teams like Oregon, like even a Minnesota, Baylor that go unbeaten and they can't be ignored. If Minnesota runs the table and beats Ohio State, you can't ignore them for long as one of the better teams in college football. But Alabama still has that swagger. Peter Burns, who joined us earlier today, said there's a lot of Alabama fatigue, and I get it. I absolutely. We do get fatigued, and we do get to a point where do we want to see some new blood in the playoff picture. But we also want to see the top, and I wouldn't want to sacrifice that just to see other teams get in. I'm not that equal opportunity. I mean, if it means that really good football teams that I know in the back of my head are better than what I'm getting, then I'm not going to be for that either. If it means Alabama gets in once again because they're one of the best teams in college football, then they're one of the best teams in college football. We'll talk more about this coming up as we roll along on SB Nation AM. Again, you can hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. Josh Alper is going to join us from Pro Football Talk. We will talk some NFL this hour as well after a great Monday Night Football game last night.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Let's get into some college football in Alabama's playoff scenario. And not where everybody is.
Because overreaction or overhypeness?
Yeah, let's not get into the overhypeness. Pat Forty at Sports Illustrated thinks Alabama's 11-1 record when it's all said and done, when they're finished, if they were to beat Auburn, would be too soft for the committee to consider. I don't necessarily disagree with that. I just think it's Alabama, and they end up getting the benefit of the doubt. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Because the committee is not doing this with any other mathematical formula. They're doing it by their own head and their own eyeball tests and their own discussions. And it's hard to be in a room to think that the Crimson Tide are somehow this loss exposed them for, you know, no, they lost at home with Tua on a bad wheel.
And we can all agree that this is probably a weaker Alabama team that we've seen in recent years. Right?
I would, yes, exactly. And you know
so
what?
It's okay that they're not in the top four.
I would ask this question, okay? If Texas ran the table in the Big 12 and their only loss was to this LSU football team in Austin and they won the Big 12, would you just put Texas in because they won their conference? Or would you say, you know, Texas beat Oklahoma, that was a ranked team. They beat Baylor, that was a ranked team. They ran the table and won the conference, but their only loss was at home to LSU. if the argument would be Texas gets in because they win the Big 12 with their only loss to a dominating LSU football team, then okay. But if your only argument, if your other argument would be, no, their only loss was to LSU at home, then why wouldn't that fit for Alabama? This year, LSU is better than Alabama, at least because they played them and beat them. But if they run the table, and that's their only blemish, why would you punish a team for that? Why would you? Because the circumstances of that loss, meaning the number one team in the nation just happens to play in our division, why is that acceptable that Georgia gets a second chance, other teams that have lost get a second chance to win a conference championship? It just can't happen for Alabama because the obstacle in their way is the number one team in the country. That doesn't seem like something you would hurt them on unless, and here's the big unless, the perception of Alabama is so high that this is disappointing enough to say, okay, the balloon has been popped. Meaning, I wouldn't punish a Texas team if their only loss was to LSU. I wouldn't punish a Georgia team if their only loss was to LSU. I wouldn't punish Ohio State if their only loss was to LSU. But I can punish Alabama because they should somehow know better. It doesn't fly with me.
All right, here you go. I got a question for you.
Yes.
I'm going to read you this tweet that Peter Burns.
Peter Burns.
Had on earlier this morning. I'm going to reiterate what he said. He tweeted this out just a few minutes ago. Just because you are sick of Alabama doesn't mean they aren't one of the best four teams in college football. Most deserving? No. But you are lying to yourself if you would take Baylor, Minnesota, Oregon, Utah, Oklahoma, or Penn State over them if your life savings were on the line.
Yep, he said that exact thing on our show earlier this morning. That exact thing. And he's right. And I know it. Listen, I know some of you out there love Alabama, and I know some of you out there do not like Alabama. And I get it. I get it. But if you can pull that emotion out for a second and really answer that question that Peter Burns just asked, would you truly trust a Baylor, a Minnesota, what were the teams you mentioned?
Oregon, Utah. Oklahoma, or Penn State.
Would you really trust them in a game against the Crimson Tide? Neutral field, at their own place, anywhere. I don't care. Would you truly trust that scenario?
Put your life savings on the line.
Because you got to be really sure about this.
I don't even know if I would put a dollar on the line.
Here's another question that I have. Because the committee is making and has since from day one said we want the four best teams in college football. What if we had a system that didn't have the best four teams in college football? What if we had a system that said, you know what? How you get into this thing is you win your conference championship or however you want to do it, win the regular season title, whatever they want to do it. What if they said, look, if that leaves some really, really good top football teams out of this thing, so be it. So be it.
God, if you just went top four, like just your conference winners.
Right.
I mean, we couldn't do that because, you know, one conference would be getting left out all the time.
Wait, we kind of do this in other sports, right?
We do.
We do this all the time. Not so much in the NBA per se, but yes and no. There have been times where the Eastern Conference playoff participants have been below 500 and above 500 teams in the West haven't made the playoffs.
Yes.
There have been times where...
Well, there was that string a couple of years ago where the Western Conference, I think what they had... I mean, it was just always the Western Conference final was the NBA final.
Right, right.
Because the East had nothing to give.
The East didn't have anything other than LeBron.
Except LeBron.
Other than LeBron. But in the NFL, you can be a 10-6 team and not be one of the two teams in the wild card race, but a 7-9 team can win the division, can win a division and get in.
Which has happened.
But what separates that in our acceptance of that is that's the rules, right? Those are the rules of the game in which you play. So you know that going into the season, right? And not to get all politics, but when people argue electoral college and popular vote, I'm always like, yeah, but the game is played this way. Like, you have to play it this way. If you play it the other way, then I get it. But the game is played like this. Same thing here. In order to get into the playoffs in sports, there's a set of rules that you follow, right? You say you got to win your conference or win your division. And then if you're not, you're one of these wild card teams. And here's where the wild card teams stand. Right. So when you get to the wild card, this is where you have to be in this scenario. Everybody knows those rules. College football doesn't have that. college football, you're at the mercy of these people in a room that are going to hash this out and will have their findings tonight that sit there and say, okay, all right, we're going to judge you on everything, and then we're going to tell you what we think. And, you know, we've had surprises where TCU and Baylor have been in the top four most of the season and hanging out. Oh, it's two teams out of the Big 12, and then nothing because Ohio State won the Big Ten and they got in, and those two teams were left out. It forced the conference to have a championship game. So again, there's no criteria for this. So what if the playoff committee said, we don't care about whining and screaming and yelling. I know you're accustomed to the best of the best of the best competing for the national championship, but we've created a system that takes us almost out of the equation completely. Six teams, one wild card, five conference champions. And that's it. I'm sorry if you go 8-3 or whatever it is, and you win the conference championship and you go 11-1 and you're left out. Sorry, too bad. This is the criteria. I think we'd be accustomed to that. We would accept it. Mike on Twitter: what if Alabama played at Minnesota? North teams don't get credit because Southern teams don't come up here in November. That's true. That is true. I've been screaming about that for a while. Now, Michael, to the Southern team's credit, they usually can't go up north in November. They're usually going to play two games. There's two types of games that most teams play in November, and that is either a game within their own conference or they're playing a cupcake at home. Those are the only two scenarios that lay them out. And so I'm not telling you anything you don't already know, but that's it. But if Alabama were to play at Minnesota in November, okay. I could see some cold weather being a factor there. I'm not ready to buy in on Minnesota just yet, but I did like the way they played against Penn State. I did like that game. I was kind of pulling for Minnesota because I liked chaos, and I wanted to see how that would play out. But I get what you're saying.
Nah, I get what you're saying, chaos.
But let's make it to where it would be though, Micah. What would you trust Minnesota on a neutral field in a playoff game against Alabama? Let's say it's at the Chick-fil-A Bowl or it's AT&T Stadium or whatever it is, Sugar Bowl, whatever bowl was hosting the playoff game. Would you trust Minnesota in that scenario against Alabama?
No,
I wouldn't.
I mean,
Alabama's putting together. They have tons and tons of players that get drafted.
I mean, right now, I'm looking at it this way. You know, LSU poked the dragon, you know, rattled the beast. And I'm not going to say LSU, you know, couldn't do it again. I think LSU would beat them 9 times out of 10 this year. But I still say Alabama is probably one of the top four teams in the country just based on, you know, history. I mean, just based on who they have on their who their personnel is. I mean, it's just, they are always that good. They've developed this program that is just unstoppable.
It really is amazing. And even when you do beat them, like Oklahoma did a couple of years ago and Utah did a couple of years ago, the answer is always they weren't really in it. They weren't mentally. They were disappointed didn't go to this game or that game.
I'd almost venture in saying this, that Alabama's probably more deserving of reaching the college football playoff than Clemson.
Yeah, you know, Clemson, it's funny that you mentioned that because it seems like every caveat about Clemson is, well, if they run the table and win the ACC, they're in.
Yeah.
It's never, well, if they stumble once and still win the ACC, they're in, because we know that's not true.
No, we know. If they lose once, they're out.
Yeah.
They're done.
They're done. You're absolutely right. They don't get the benefit of the doubt. They don't get the one loss. LSU can lose, and if they still win the SEC, they better not lose to Arkansas. That would be terrible.
Yeah, that's
but if they lose one more, and I think they have, I still think they have Texas A&M on their schedule, but I have to look that up. I'll have to double check on that. I think they have Ole Miss. Yep, they have Ole Miss, Arkansas, and Texas A&M. They could lose to Texas A&M at the last game of the season and still play because they have to lose twice for Alabama to get in. So if they were to win against Mississippi State, Ole Miss, and Arkansas, and they clinch the West, and they're going to play Georgia or whoever, and they lose to Texas A&M, they could still go in because the SEC champion will get in. But Clemson doesn't get that. I mean, just Clemson won't get that. It is a feeling that they just won't. All right, again on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. Again, Ron with two N's. Love to hear from you on that. A number of things about the NFL, and we'll get to that coming up. Josh Alper will join us from Pro Football Talk. Can't wait to hear his thoughts on Monday Night Football as we continue on SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right. Thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. As we cruise along on a Tuesday, don't forget, trust the friendly, knowledgeable parts professionals at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Their professionals know what it takes to get the job done right. Professional technicians have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for years. Come see for yourself. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Ron asked me this question yesterday and said, which head coaches in college football would be good on a sitcom?
Or if you were to develop a sitcom around
them. Right. If you were to say, take these guys and develop a sitcom around them. And I think that's a good question. So we could actually create a television show around the college football head coaches. Yes. And a lot of it centers around the fact that Mike Leach is so fun.
Exactly.
Talking
that,
zombies.
And that's where it came from.
Right, because we had the zombie speech that Mike Leach gave. And we said, what if you took Mike Leach and put him in a sitcom?
Mike Leach, he'd be like Cliff Clavin, wouldn't he?
He'd be like Cliff Clavin, right.
He's coming in with the random thought, but instead of giving you fact, he would give you Leachism.
Would you take Mike Leach and would you put him in a sitcom as the star, or would you make him a role player that is more like the Cliff Clavin character?
Role player.
Right, so you'd have something going on with the main characters and he's like the buddy. He's like the friend that knows everything.
Yep, doesn't know everything, just has the opinion.
Oh, has the opinion, he knows everything,
yeah,
right.
You could have two people talking about the latest Walking Dead movie.
Right.
And he would come in and just start talking like, well, you know what the problem with zombies is.
That would be great.
And you're like, okay.
That's where he goes. Like the Thanksgiving special where he'd come in and go, you know, Thanksgiving really didn't start with the pilgrims. It actually started with a bunch of Martians that came down here a million years ago. They liked turkey meat so much. They put it in our brains as the human race was developing that we liked turkey too, but only once a year.
Before it was turkey meat, though, it was dinosaur.
It was dinosaur, and you'd get together. And
this was a little tough to eat.
Create a pie.
Chewing.
So they decided to go with another fowl. Like that would be great. What now, Nick Saban? If you were to put Nick Saban in a sitcom,
I don't see a role. He would be terrible.
Would he be the?
Be a landlord, wouldn't he?
Yes, yes. Okay, so you put yes, he would
or
be
the downstairs neighbor who's always complaining about the ones upstairs.
He would not be like on Three's Company. He would not be Don Knotts. He would
be
the other guy, the Roper.
Yeah, Roper.
He would be Mr. Roper. Just the you kids, pay the rent. Stop making all that noise.
That, or he would be the villain in every Scooby-Doo.
That's right.
Episode where you pull the mask off.
Like, it's old man Saban again. That's right. And I got away with it. It wasn't for you kids.
And I thought about this, Jim Harbaugh. He would be he'd be like that Dennis the Menace down the street. That neighbor that you just can't stand.
Right.
You try to avoid all the time.
Would he be more like the kind of the yuppie neighbor that drives the fancy car that doesn't have kids.
Yep.
Him and his wife go on fancy vacations. She's a good-looking lady. They have all the fun stuff while you're trying to fix a tricycle and your daughter's like got snot down her nose and your wife is screaming that the barbecue is burning and you look over there and he's waving from his BMW like, we're going to Tahiti. Can you watch the house for us?
BMW,
like that character.
It'd be a BMW convertible, but he's wearing a visor.
That's right. He's wearing a visor. And you're like, God, God, and then back then, you get the mayonnaise from the store? And you're like, no, I didn't. I got to go get some.
Or would that role be better served for Lane Kiffin?
That might be Lane Kiffin. That's a good point. That's a good point.
Because I think Jim Harbaugh, he would be the one who would borrow your tools. He'd be that neighbor that borrows your tools and never gives them back.
Yeah, that's right. Yep, that's right. That's right. Now, James Franklin of Penn State could play the role of the neighbor that is always way too happy and cheering you up all the time.
Yes.
Right? Like, you'd be like, hey, man, what's going on, John? I lost my job today. But cheer up. There's always a sunny side to the street. You'll get another job. And not only will you get another job, you'll be as good as that as you were at this one, if not even better. I know, but can I just be sad today? Nope. We're going to turn that frown upside down. I'm going to take you out. I'm going to take you out right now. Let's go. I'd rather not. Nope, you are. Come on with me. That would be James Franklin.
And yeah, I got this one. Ed Orgeron, he's your boss.
Oh, Ed Orgeron's your boss. Absolutely.
He's
that
your
would
boss.
Be great.
He comes in, tells you what he needs, and he walks out. And
that's all he does.
And you're sitting there looking like, okay, I have no idea what he just said.
Anybody smoking in the break room?
And you're like, no, nobody's smoking in the break room. You're waving off the smoke. That's great. Ed Orgeron is the boss.
He's the boss. Right. Doesn't matter the company either.
That's great.
Doesn't matter. It could be a construction crew all the way up to a stock market exchange, and he's wearing suspenders. He's your boss.
That's right.
It doesn't matter what job he is. In fact, he'd be the boss in every scene.
So our main character is now working at a dead-end job that he may lose, where James Franklin might cheer him up. He's jealous of his Lane Kiffin / Jim Harbaugh neighbor who has the good life and money and no kids to spend money on and whatnot. And Ed Orgeron is his boss. And let me try to figure this out. Nick Saban is his landlord. And, oh, I got one.
So are you coming up with the main character?
Yeah, no, I'm coming up with another side character. If you can come up with a main character, that'd be great.
Well,
here's another one. This is fun. This is a fun segment. Here's another one. Will Muschamp of South Carolina is that employee that never loses his job, and you can't figure out why they're still employed within the company. Every day you go to work going, how does he still have a job here? Why does he have his own parking spot? He's terrible at this. I can't believe I'm losing out on promotions to this guy. That's Will Muschamp. Will Muschamp is that character.
I don't think this guy would be a star, but it just made me think of him when you said he was at a dead-end job. Was Chip Kelly?
Chip Kelly, right? Yeah, Chip Kelly.
Because he's not the star, but he definitely is someone who's at a dead end job.
He had once big time glory and potential, and then found himself in the middle office where nobody walks in anymore. And Urban Meyer is the character that really wants to come in and take over your life, but is always saying he has no interest in it whatsoever. Like, he wants to marry your wife, he wants to raise your kids, he wants to have your house, but he's like, no, I don't really want any of this.
He's that millionaire down the street who has it all.
Has it all.
And says he wants your life, but doesn't really want it because he already has it all.
That's right, exactly. Exactly. Michael on Twitter, ladies and gentlemen, coming this fall, a new comedy called I'm a Man, I'm 40, starring Mike Gundy.
There you go.
That's great. Sitcom starring our favorite college football coaches. That's awesome. Mike Leach, of course, at the center of it all is the know-it-all neighbor. I just can't tell you. Just can't admit he doesn't know what he's talking about. That's awesome. Josh Alper next. We'll talk some NFL.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, week 10 of the NFL in the books after last night's thrilling Monday night football game. Josh Alper joins us, Pro Football Talk, to go over that and many more items around the league. How are you, Josh?
I'm doing great.
Josh, what is the takeaway after last night's game? I mean, both teams are really secure in their records and whatnot, but was there anything significant that popped out of you to get an overtime last-second field goal in a classic like that?
Well, I think it's tempting to read some stuff into the 49ers offense, you know, being asked to win a game for the first time this year and not being able to pull it off, although, you know, you have to grade that on a curve with no George Kittle and Emmanuel Sanders getting hurt. They were certainly underpowered from where they were at some other places. But, you know, the turnovers are concerning, and, you know, it is certainly a game that stands out from most of the others that the 49ers have played this year in terms of the level of competition and the seasoned nature of a team like the Seahawks. So I think, you know, you look a little bit into that. And then I think my other big takeaway was that Jadeveon Clowney looked exactly like the player we all thought he was going to be coming into the league. And there've been flashes of it, but if he can do that over an extended period of time in the second half of this season, the Seahawks outlook looks completely different.
And I know I'm going to throw the caveat out. We still have a lot of football left to play and a lot of things can happen and a lot of teams can rise and fall, but Seattle winning this game, That puts pressure on any team in the NFC that's not going to win their division to get a wild card spot.
Yeah, and look, I actually just did this for PFC this morning. Look at the playoff picture, and the Vikings and Seahawks have a pretty comfortable margin. You know, you look at the AFC where everything is real jammed up. You know, there's a pretty clear gap in my mind between right. the Vikings and Seahawks and the other teams that are vying for a wild card spot in the NFC. And it is a lot of football left, but it is hard to make really compelling arguments for the Rams or Panthers, Bears, those teams that are sitting outside looking in, unless something really drastically changes for the Vikings and Seahawks. And then obviously the Packers and 49ers on top of that.
I did a little looking into the Steelers after they beat the Rams, and I said, okay, this is a team that started 0-3 and now 5-4 and have won four straight. But those four losses have came against the best teams in the NFL. But are we talking about a good Steelers team? What do we have here in Pittsburgh?
I think we're talking about an elite defensive football team, one of the best that – I mean, the Minkah Fitzpatrick trade, I did not expect to have this kind
Me
of an
either.
Impact.
Absolutely.
I think that it took everybody by surprise, and it really does go to show you what can happen if you put a player in a system that fits for them and put them in a spot and leave them there and so on and so forth. But I think that it's fair to question whether Mason Rudolph can do enough offensively to win games. But you look at the way this defense plays, and if you ask him to do what he did against the Rams, if you ask the defense, the offense to churn out, you know, in the neighborhood of 20 points, and you're not going to let up that many, it's a formula that's made for tension. It's a formula that's made for nail-biting games and can come back to haunt you. But I think it's the only thing that the Steelers have going for them. And you look at the way their schedule breaks out versus some of the other contenders, and they look good. They look like in really good position right now, which is shocking because they were starting a third-string quarterback with a 1-3 record so recently.
Yeah. Kansas City, kind of a two-part question here, Josh, when talking to Josh Alper, Pro Football Talk. Kansas City, how concerned would you be about where they stand, and how concerned would you be about their run defense? Because Tennessee ran all over them.
I'd be very concerned about the defense. I think that it's, the idea this year was like, we got to be just a little bit better than we were with Bob Sutton as the defensive coordinator, and it's starting to feel like they might not even be as good as they were defensively last year. The Frank Clark and Tyrann Mathieu moves have not given them the boost that I think they really hoped it would. And now you lost Emmanuel Agba for the rest of the season. He was a much more consistent pass rusher than Clark has been. And so you have Chris Jones playing lights out and no one else really playing at a high level. It's tough. It's tough to overcome those things. And look, the offense, I don't think Patrick Mahomes was as sharp as he possibly could be last weekend, but he threw for 450 yards and three touchdowns. So it's going to be about the defense, and I don't think that it's up to the task, even with the changes that they made from last year. I don't know that you can get much better at this point in the season, and where they are isn't good enough.
The Titans at 5-5 look like, okay, we made the right decision at quarterback changing over to Ryan Tannehill. Defense is playing good. They needed a lot of things to go right in their win against the Chiefs. Are the Titans a wild card threat? Are they playing with some house money? How do you view Tennessee?
They're definitely a threat because they do those kinds of, they since they've put Tannehill in the lineup, they do just about, they do everything well, and they do they do it efficiently. They're not turning the ball over. They're not having those issues getting the offense going. The Derrick Henry second half of the season thing is starting to kick in and seeing better and better, better and better results on that front. And it's a tough team. It's a team that's always a bear to play against defensively because they do have talent in all three levels of the defense. I just wonder if they can be consistent enough to get the job done. And if they can, I think that, Ryan Tannehill's offseason is going to be one of the most interesting storylines in the NFL.
Josh, what is the most concerning thing about the way the Rams are playing at 5-4?
Their offensive line has one starter in the spot that he was in at the start of the season. Jared Goff's not getting time to do anything. They they don't have that run game to set up the play action like they had last year. I think the offensive line is at the center of all of that, and I think there are legitimate concerns about Goff and Todd Gurley and their futures and what that looks like. But until you fix an offensive line, it is impossible to get anything done. And you know, the play that they had against Pittsburgh, if that's going to continue and you lost two more guys, you know, perhaps for the rest of the season, it's a real uphill battle, I think, for the Rams.
Is the criticism of Goff, given the offensive line problem and the inability to run the ball, is it fair? I mean, I hate to use that term because, you're getting paid a lot of money, figure it out. But is it more than just Goff's play? Because that seems like if you can't do those two things, protect the quarterback and run the ball, that is a lot to put on a quarterback's shoulder, no matter who it is.
Well, it definitely is, and it's all the more so when you look at the quarterbacks, you look at the guys who are at the top of the MVP race, Wilson, Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson. These are guys who make their living. They live and die by making off-schedule plays. Jared Goff does not make off-schedule plays. When you don't have an offensive line, you don't have a running back, you need to do that. I mean, how many times have we seen Russell Wilson be the entire Seahawks offense and, right, and bring them back in game? Goff isn't that kind of a quarterback. That's why it was questionable to me to make such a huge commitment to him, given the vagaries of the rest of the league and you know, aging offensive line. You lost two guys from last year's starting team even before the season started. That to me is the foundational issue for the Rams, because if you can't build an offense that Goff can succeed in, his contract totally hamstrings you from doing anything else to put a contending team on the field.
When the Vikings were 2-2, there's the famous calling out, if you will, of the players, and it looked like there was some contention in Minnesota. But since then, only one loss, and then they've gone 5-1 since then. What changed? I mean, look, it's easy to say we got to play better, and that seems to be the cliched answer. But did they make a change that says, look, we're going to do this differently, and we're going to do that differently, and we're going to fix this, and now it's working?
I think the thing that we've seen in this winning streak is they come out early and establish Kirk Cousins and establish the passing game and try and make plays there and get that lead, and then you start hammering Dalvin Cook and Alexander Mattison. Now, again, that's a pretty simple system, right? Get a lead, run the ball, run the clock out. You know, and then with those pass rushers that they have, when you're leading, it's much easier to create pressure and make life miserable on quarterbacks. So I think that flipping that switch and flipping that idea from, like, we want to be a run-first team, we want to have this run-first mentality, to saying, like, yeah, we want to be that kind of tough team. We want to be a hard-nosed football team that wins games by grinding out, you know, the clock in the fourth quarter, third, fourth quarter. But I think that change in philosophy about opening up and trusting Cousins early has made just a world of difference for them. And I think that a win like Sunday night's is a really big one psychologically for a team that everyone felt couldn't win games like that on, you know, prime time, on the road, those sorts of things. And, you know, they've won two out of the last three games in prime time. And so that narrative changes a bit. And now, it, you know, you see where you go from here.
Good stuff. Josh, always good talking to you, my friend. Thank you so much again for joining us.
My pleasure.
Love it. Josh Alper, Pro Football Talk, talking some NFL, talking about one team in purple, two purple seat cushions. Purple seat cushions are soft where you want it, firm where you need it, and it's cool all over. Instantly adapting to your body for personalized comfort and support. They've got hundreds of open air channels to keep you comfortable at a temperature that you'll like. Supports you all day so you don't experience sitting fatigue. I have gotten that before. And you know, when you're working on a chair, that's what happens, but this will help that immensely. Sits the test of time. It's ultra durable. It can follow you around for years. Other people may want to steal it, but don't let them steal it. Tell them to get their own. Purple seat cushion. Visit them at purple.com/seat cushions. 30-day trial, 1-year warranty, free shipping and returns at purple.com. And it is absolutely fantastic. Total no pressure support, soft and firm at the same time, so you can sit at your work, at home, or at the game comfier and longer. Again, purple.com/seat cushions. Try them out today. SB Nation Radio, it's SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM. If you are in an area of the country that's getting winterized, be careful. Even if you're used to it, even if you've been doing it for your whole life, just be careful. We love you.
Yeah, so especially if you're in a place that doesn't have, that doesn't normally get winter, like down here in the south.
Right. Be careful.
We're a little nervous.
My kids were so disappointed this morning they had school. I said,
my kid kept asking, like, hey, Dad, if it snows, Mom said I get to stay home. I'm like, dude, it's not going to snow. And if it does, you're barely going to get an inch.
I know I'm a little old school, but I grew up in an area where you would wake up and you'd run. You were in Southern Cal, so you don't know this.
No, we usually did this with ash and earthquakes.
Right, probably true. Right. So we would get snow. Like, the forecast would be snow for Tuesday. It should start around 1 a.m. and go into the early morning. And we get all excited, right? So either two things were going to happen on snow days. Either one, my father, who would wake up and wake us up to go to school, would say, no school today. And we're like, yeah, we're not even getting out of bed. Woo! Or we'd get out of bed, eat breakfast, get dressed, and listen to the radio. And the local radio station would be like, school closings today. And they would list off all the schools. You'd be like, come on, 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 come on. And then they would announce your school and you go crazy. The worst was a 2-hour delay. Because the 2-hour delay was, you're still going to school, but you're kind of up now and you really aren't going to go back to sleep. The best, of course, was when they knew immediately there was no school. Like, no school today. You're like, great. I'm staying in bed. It's cozy. I'm warm. I'm staying here and I'm sleeping. But 2-hour delay, you were getting up, walking around. All right, 2-hour delay. All right, 2-hour delay. Now I'm just going to hang out and go to school late.
Yeah, I remember once, only once, it snowed in Southern California. And my school was a block south of the dividing line. Like, all schools north of this street are closed. All schools of south of the street are still open.
Ah, very good.
I missed out. I mean, we had snow in our front yard. It was snow. That was a weird time. It was like, it actually snowed in Malibu, if you can believe that.
Gotcha. Oh, wow. Well, that must have been a very, very rare occasion.
Extremely rare. I think for me, that happened. I think it was 1990-something, 1989 when that happened.
Yeah.
And it hasn't happened since.
It'll get snow here in Nashville, but I watched the Packers-Carolina game. That was cool, even in early November, to see snow at Lambeau Field. I enjoyed watching that. I like snow during football games. I like it I like it when it's like a blizzard outside. It's the best. It's good weather. I don't like rain, though, in football games. Snow, I don't mind, but rain, like a monsoon, like we had when that Redskins game, I'm not a fan of that. But I'll watch a good snow game. After all, have you ever been in an area that had been feats of snow? Like, gone?
I have family that live in Syracuse.
And oh, so okay.
I've gone back there in the wintertime and built tunnels.
Was it August? Because it snows there constantly. Like, it's 12 months out of the year.
It was towards the later end. It was April. No, in all honesty, I think it was beginning of March, and they were getting another lake effect snowstorm.
Oh yeah, golly, and that's bad. Those are brutal.
And that it's fun to be there towards the beginning of the season. Everyone's always excited.
Excited, right?
At the end of the season, I mean, that's where you just had mounds of black snow, and you're like, oh god, that's just ugly. All the cars are rusted out.
That was my problem living in New England. I loved growing up in New Hampshire. I loved the fall. Up until the holidays, I'm in, right? There's lights. There's a town Christmas tree. There's snow. I dig it. After that, man, when all the lights come down, it is a brutal, depressing. It's gray all the time. There's no sun. It's brown, gross snow all on the sides of the roads, mud, slush, just all the way through until the spring, and then it's melting and everything's wet. It's gross. When I lived in Colorado, it would snow, and then it would be bright, sunny, blue skies right after the storm. I loved it. I loved it, but yeah, it was tough. But be safe out there. I know this winter is hitting different people in different ways. Be careful out there as you're driving around. SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM.